Recession and inflation are here. Gas, housing, and everyday goods are up, way up. And you want to be ready for any situation. So what would you do if there's no food on the shelf? Arc Heirloom Seeds are here to help. Did you know 99% of seeds sold today can't reproduce? With heirloom seeds, you only have to plant once. Then you can grow year after year, giving you and your family stability and security because things are getting crazy out there. Our all-in-one seed kit provides everything you need to grow your own food. This premium seed kit has over 65 varieties, 50,000 seeds in stores for 15 years. You'll also get our exclusive seed guide to make growing a no-brainer. Arc Seed Kits is a family-owned and operated business and the most trusted name in the nation for over 15 years. Our mandate is to get heirloom seeds into every home in America. Go to arcseedkits.com today and get free shipping by entering promo code podcast. That's arkseedkits.com. Promo code podcast. Get your seeds, get prepared, get growing. arcseedkits.com.
Make sure to head over to timcast.com, click join us, and become a member to support our work directly, because this show is made possible thanks in part to viewers like you. If you like the work we do, become a member, and you'll also get access to uncensored, members-only shows from Timcast IRL, Monday through Thursday at 10 p.m. You can also join our Discord server and talk with like-minded individuals. Now, let's get into that first story. Ladies and gentlemen, my fellow Americans, this may come as a shock to you, but only 38% of voters think Biden will be alive at the end of his second term, and more than a third believe Kamala Harris will be president by January 2029 if 81-year-old is reelected. I see a whole bunch of stories popping up. Democrats are panicking that they're losing minority voters. And you know why? Well, aside from the fact that they're releasing untold numbers of criminal aliens into the country that are displacing many small and poor communities. Aside from that, nobody thinks Joe Biden's going to make it anyway. So whoever you're, if everybody knows, you're not voting for Biden, you're voting Harris 2028. Or I guess 2026, I don't know. We don't know how long Joe Biden's going to make it. Now, I say this with all due respect. When John McCain died, I know everybody hates the guy, not literally everybody, but, you know, people of sound conscience are not fans of John McCain. And that being said, I do not take pleasure in celebrating death. When John McCain died, many on the left, every political faction except for the centrists were cheering for his demise. Except not me. And I found that meme where they were like, normie centrists were like, sad, you know, sad. And I'm like, dude, you're never going to convince me to celebrate a person's death. I don't like any of it. I think it's a slippery slope. I think we should lament the loss of opportunity. John McCain could have been better. He did have a crazy story, and it's not all bad warmongering and things like that. But it's not good. It's not good. That being said, the reason I bring this up is that I don't like Joe Biden, but I certainly would not celebrate his demise. I certainly would not encourage anything bad to happen to him. I think the dude should be sitting in a wheelchair with a blanket on his lap in the sun, enjoying his golden years, relaxing, talking to his kids. I think he's had a bad career. I think he's a bad guy. I think there's a lot of people in prison who are bad people, too. But you get to a certain age and it's like, well, what do? You bring them to their home and you say the ride has come to an end. But there are a lot of people who are nasty, I guess. Outside of that, my point is this. The average American is well aware that Joe Biden cannot, will not, probably won't even make it. We don't even know if he's going to make it to the end of this year. He's well past the average life expectancy of a U.S. male, which I believe is 73. And so at this point, with the stumbling, with the fumbling, with the sunken eyes, it ain't looking too good. And we're supposed to entertain this. No, most people get it. So when we look to bigger stories, we have this from the Wall Street Journal. This is the great shift. Why Democrats are losing their grip on Latino voters. How's this from The Guardian? Black and Hispanic voters deserting the Democratic Party in large numbers. The Democratic Party is crumbling. It's crumbling. So I wonder, as we move forward, what will we get? Now, of course, it wouldn't be a political segment talking about Democrats falling apart without bringing up Israel, which is a large component of the collapse right now. Donald Trump has no problem saying that he is the most pro-Israel candidate. Democrats are struggling because their multicultural coalition includes many cultures that don't like Israel. And so in Minnesota and in Michigan, Joe Biden is in trouble in these key areas. In Dearborn, where you have many Muslims who are not happy about what's going on with Israel and Palestine. And then in Minnesota with Somalis, who are also very similar. I believe they're mostly Muslim as well. Michael Rapaport finally wakes up and supports Trump over Biden. So this segment is not just to talk about Biden being old and people not want to vote for him. It's about all of the reasons. And I think what we're seeing now is the great shift as the Democratic Party loses any meaningful reason to vote for him. Any meaningful core ideology. Now, we had this conversation with Elad Eliyahu. He reports for SCNR, Field Reporting. And he said he thinks the Republicans are falling apart and this is it for them. And I said, how? He said, well, without Trump, they have no charismatic figure. I said, no, the problem with Republicans, they have too big of a backbench. Oh, man. Carrie Lake, Kristi Noem, Ron DeSantis. I know, but yes, Ron DeSantis. His successes in Florida cannot be discounted, despite the fact the man does not know how to campaign at a national level. He still is a successful and powerful voice. You've got Vivek Ramaswamy. You've got at a lower tier, you have people like Tim Scott. And Bruceowitz running for Congress now. These are the younger guys who are stepping up. Then, of course, you've got Matt Gaetz. You've got J.D. Vance. You've got a massive backbench. And I'm probably forgetting many people. Not to mention the powerful voices that come with people like Lauren Boebert and Marjorie Taylor Greene. Now, what do you have on the Democrat side? Tain't no backbench. People are like, Gavin Newsom. Oh, come on. Give me Gavin Newsom policy. Sorry. I can tell you everything Ron DeSantis has done. I can tell you why people are happy about him. Ain't nobody happy about what's going on in California. The Democratic Party is fracturing. And although I don't... There are people who are just, they have Israel derangement syndrome. I do think Israel may be one of the largest components. And I will make sure to make this distinction in the segment about the difference between true criticism of Israel and Israel derangement syndrome. But first, let me share with you some words from Michael Rapaport.
In all honesty, I have educated myself so much since 2016, and I have a ways to go. My political views have changed immensely. And they're changing at a rapid pace. I will not vote for Joe Biden. I do not support anybody from the squad. I think they're totally full of shit.
He does rag on the squad quite a bit.
Voting for Trump is on the table.
There we go.
People are like, what are you talking about? That's my reality. That is my reality. I will not support anybody who's anti-Israel. I will not support anybody that is anti making America safe. I'm not supporting anybody that is cool with the fact that it takes me 2.5 hours to get back into America from Toronto the passport at the
passport control.
The line to go from Toronto to New York, it takes me 2.5 hours, as it should, but it takes you 2 minutes to cross the border. I'm not down with that shit. I'm not down with police officers in the greatest city on earth getting beaten up, and you're a legal immigrant, and then you have no bail. I'm not down with...
And flipping off the camera.
Flipping off the fucking camera like Tupac when he got arrested and he was coming out in the red Detroit Red Wings t-shirt.
I'm going to fact check that one. The guy who flipped off the camera was an illegal immigrant, but was wrongly accused. He was not the guy who actually attacked that cop. That's my understanding. And so the reason why he was flipping him off is because he was like, I'm not the guy. And everyone assumes they just let him go. That's not the case, but I suppose I could be wrong. But
I'm not down with going into a Costco or a 7-Eleven or a Rite Aid, as I videotaped once and went crazy viral, cleaning out the spot and walking like you're on a beautiful spring day walk. I'm not down with any of that shit.
Here we are. Michael Rapaport, who so famously would scream to the camera that Trump was bad and that he had, and I quote, pig dick, is now saying Trump's on the table. He's not saying Trump's on the table. He's saying he's voting Trump. He's still a little worried about saying it. That's why he's saying it's on the table. He's not voting for Biden. He's voting for Trump. I think it's fair that he's somewhat reluctant to just outright come and say it. Joe Rogan, same way. Many of these people will not come out and admit it. But I'll tell you this. I'd be willing to bet that Anna Kasparian of the Young Turks also votes for Donald Trump. I really do think so. Trump has got character defects, and that's an understatement. But Trump also has done a lot of good things. And I think foreign policy wise, he's the greatest president of my generation. I think the economy was going really well. Spending was a bit out of control. Drone strikes? Absolutely. No way am I going to say that this is the best president who ever lived, like many people who are Trump supporters would. I think if you ignore the legitimate criticisms that many people have, you're not going to actually get them to listen. But I think when you look at what's going on now, when you see Democrats bleeding support, when you see these never-Trumper, anti-Trumper guys like Rappaport coming out and being like, I can't do this, man. The great shift is upon us. Anna Kasparian, Young Turks, you're saying, what? No way she votes Trump. So here I am playing poker with the boys, as I often do. Actually, I haven't played in a couple weeks. We've been doing a lot of skateboarding. But we're playing poker, and there was a couple guys there who were into politics and knew I was and were asking about it. And they said, no way that happens. No way. Young Turks, nah. And I said, you need to listen to what she's saying. You need to listen to Anna Kasparian. You need to see what she's upset about. You need to see the facts she's reporting. She's right all the way. Now, maybe she doesn't like that I'm saying she's going to vote for Trump. Maybe that puts some heat on her. But a year ago, leftists and liberals were calling her the next Dave Rubin. I think that's meant to be insulting to Anna Kasparian. What I'm saying is this.
It's another morning, and you're all set for work. You grab your coffee, head out the door, and your car decides today's the day it won't start. Panic sets in. You're not just late, you're stranded. Get ahead of unexpected car repairs before they strike with CarShield, the most trusted vehicle protection company. For almost 20 years, CarShield has saved millions of drivers from repair nightmares with low monthly plans that cover up to 5,000 major parts and systems, like pricey transmission and engine repairs, and check engine light mysteries. Visit CarShield today at carshield.com/Carlson. Plans include unlimited miles, 24/7 roadside assistance, help with flats, lockouts, and rental car options. Save 20% and get a free quote by visiting CarShield online at carshield.com/Carlson. Don't wait for the next surprise. Choose peace of mind with CarShield. Go to carshield.com/Carlson and save 20% today.
People like Michael Rappaport and Anna Kasparian have started to take a look into what's going on more and more. And they've often been watching what's going on. But now it's gotten so bad that you're really between a rock and a hard place. For Anna, the Young Turks had advocate, namely Cenk, for bail reform. Now, me personally, I'm in favor of bail reform. I want y'all to understand this. A guy's walking down the street, and he's wearing blue jeans and a white shirt. And a guy in blue jeans and a white shirt robs a bodega, a corner store. He runs out. He runs, turns the corner, jumps into an alley, and hides in a garbage can. The cops run by and see the wrong guy, and they arrest him. And this guy's like, yo, what's going on? And they're like, you're under arrest. He's like, what? I wasn't even in there. Like, nice try, buddy. So he goes to jail. They say, this is the guy. And now this guy gets to spend the weekend in jail. He misses 2 days of work. He doesn't answer the phone. Nobody knows where he is. 2 days, no call, no show. Company fires him. Monday comes around. He goes in to a hearing. He says, I'm not guilty. They got the wrong guy. And they say, everybody says that. Okay. Should this guy have to put up cash? Now, don't get me wrong. A lot of people are going to be like, that's never going to happen. That's so rare. Doesn't matter. The system should not be allowed to imprison someone for any amount of time without a hearing instantly. As soon as the person's arrested, before they're forced to stay in that jail, they should get a hearing. That's how it's supposed to be. But we broke the system because we can't handle it anymore. Short of a preponderance of evidence where the person is a violent threat, this is the challenge we face. This guy gets out. The court says, wrong guy. They picked up the right guy. You're free to go. And he goes, I lost my job. He goes into his job and says, I got wrongly arrested. And they're like, look, I don't know. Like, it's a corporate company. You know, you know the rules. That's it. You're fired. Some people might say, no company would. Yes, they would. There are companies that I've worked for. They don't care what your reason is. When I worked for American Airlines Regional, which is American Eagle, in your first 6 months, if you are late two times, they fire you. And they say the reason does not matter. Union contract, we all agreed. You're late the first time. I got a flat tire. Doesn't matter. And that actually happened to me, and it was really funny. Me and my friend, he got a flat tire. We were driving to work together. I was like 18. And he was like, we're going to be late. And we ended up making it on time. But it was scary. Imagine you work for a big corporate chain like that. You get wrongly arrested. And then they hold you. It's worse. I mean, the bail thing is much worse than that because let's say you go before a judge and he's like, bail set at $10,000. You're like, I don't have that money. It's like, well, you only need $1,000 to put up. I don't have that. Then we're holding you for 3 months until your trial's complete. Boom, your life's destroyed. You lose your apartment. You got a dog. Good luck. You have to call somebody and ask them to take care of it. Who knows? Rent's not getting paid. You get evicted. You lose your job. You get out. Then what? Now, the problem with New York is that it's reasonable to say this, everything I just did. But I also recognized well early on that this was going to lead to them just letting criminals go because they'd already been doing it. And so this is not the path towards solving this problem. There may be no good solution here. The Young Turks said bail reform. What happened? Anna Kasparian now is shocked to find that there were four people, I believe it was, who had blood and guts in their drain pipes, body parts strewn about. They tried hiding the body parts. And the police said they're not bail eligible, so they're free to go. Bail eligible meaning they're not eligible to be held with bond. They're free to go. And they were told, don't miss your court dates. And Anna went off. What? If this is what it means to be on the left, I am not left anymore, she said. And Jack deflects. No. I don't know how anyone, you see with Michael Rapaport, you see with Anna Kasparian, you can see with what's going on. There was this video that went viral, and I believe it was in Chicago, of black voters chanting, no more vote blue or something like that. So you got to vote red now. You got to vote Republican. And I wonder if this is kind of like with Jimmy Carter, where you get these policies that just go so bad that people just, I love it. People are like, Ronald Reagan is the greatest president. No, he's not. Gun control, no fault divorce. I get it. A lot of that came from when he was governor, but he was certainly not. He was mentally stagnant, will be nice, in his later years. And there are people who are like traditional conservatives who are like, blasphemy, he was the best. No. I mean, I wasn't alive, so. I think I was like two, actually. But the point is, it was actually that Jimmy Carter did so bad that Ronald Reagan looked great by comparison. And I wouldn't even say it's necessarily Jimmy Carter. Certainly it was a lot. But it was also the Fed with interest rates, which, you know, you could blame on him and all that. People were not happy with interest rates the way, I think they were like 20-something percent. So it was particularly brutal. Economy was not doing too well. Well, here we are today. There are going to be people, I believe, like Anna Kasparian. She may never admit it, but I can't see how someone like Joe Rogan or Anna Kasparian, Rogan less so, Rogan I get, but like the people who, like Rogan said, I would vote for Trump over Biden or something to that effect. He didn't outright say, I am going to vote for Donald Trump. He said, Biden's not even there. I can understand why Anna would not want to say publicly she voted for Trump, but I can't understand how, knowing what she knows, she would go into the ballot box and be like, Joe Biden. It makes no sense. To be fair, maybe she votes third party. Maybe she votes RFK Jr. Recognize that. RFK Jr. is pushing back on a lot of this craziness, but still fairly woke himself. The issue now is that if Democrats really are losing, if they're really losing minority voters, they can't win. Take a look at this from CNN. The Biden campaign makes direct appeal to Haley supporters in new digital ad. They're actually trying to convince Republicans to go Democrat. Could this be the great shift? Populists, whether they like Trump or not, vote for Trump. And the establishment coalesces around itself. Could it be that the realignment is not left and right? And it's not that, like, I used to be on the left, but then the left went too far left. And what happens is you get the likes of Anna Kasparian, Michael Rapaport, just coming out and being like Trump. You get a realignment where neocons join the neolibs and create the neoliberal conservative party. And populists form the, like, American Populist Coalition. I wonder. Haley voters probably will vote for Biden. Not all of them, but many of them. Many of the people who supported Haley actually were Biden voters who were lying in the first place. But I don't see how Biden is able to maintain anything. It's a facade. The Uniparty establishment is in shambles. What does that mean for this country? I don't know. It may mean the end of the great American empire, which many leftists should appreciate. They never wanted in the first place. It could mean the rise of China, which could be bad for everybody. I care about America. I don't care about colonization and empire. You know, Joe Biden over the weekend announced that the 31st would be Transgender Day of Visibility. Just so happened to be Easter. And what people don't realize is that that's the day before April Fool's Day. Weird day to choose. But of course, many people were saying that this was pandering to the left. And then, of course, on Easter Sunday, he posted a message in support of Easter or whatever, saying, Happy Easter. You can't have it both ways. You can't do it. The funny thing is, the mayor of London then said, Transgender Day of Visibility. And I'm like, that's an American thing. But they're doing it in London? Wow. The mayor of London is I suppose the UK is now a vassal of the United States. How about that? I mean, maybe not. My point is, at least the United States, the Democrats are desperately trying to play it both ways because they need to win over the progressives on issues like Israel-Palestine, but they can't. Republicans don't have to do that. What may end up happening is that you end up with such a crisis in America itself. Everything else becomes ancillary. And you get these liberals like Rappaport who have no choice but to just vote for Donald Trump. I'll vote for Trump. It's on the table. And he might say Trump's bad for this, that, or this reason. But, you know, I think Michael's realizing what many of us realized a long time ago. The man has character defects. He's funny, too. But what are you going to do? Vote for Joe Biden? The funny thing is, for Michael, Israel was the real wake-up call. And that's where I think the Democratic Party is completely fractured. They stand no chance. This fracturing of the Democratic Party due to the issue of Israel is untenable. On the Republican side, you have two issues. You have the issue of America First versus the issue of pro-Israel, support for Israel. Now, Lauren Boebert, for instance, very pro-Israel. Me, I just don't care. I don't know why it has anything to do with me. The Balfour Declaration was 100 years ago. Look, I got no beef with Israel. Cue all the anti-Israel people. But let me tell you about Israel derangement syndrome versus Israel criticism versus the Israel neutral. Israel derangement syndrome are these people to where, like, no matter what you say, they're shrieking Zionist and they claim Jews are responsible for everything. And I'm like, y'all are crazy. It's the same as wokeness. It's like the woke people are deranged and there's anti-Israel derangement. But then there's legitimate criticism of Israel. I mean, Rogan brought it up. These four guys are walking in a drone strike, missiles slam into them. And we want answers as what that is. Why is the U.S. supporting this? It's not our, like, why are we involved? Why is the U.S. building a port in Gaza? That's colonization. I don't want to be involved in any of it. I'm sick of it. But Israel can do it. Whatever. It's a foreign country. I care about Israel as much as I care about Sudan or Burma. The Israel derangement people think it's like everything. I'm like, there's bigger conflicts in the world right now. As for the left, though, the left is Israel derangement. That's the only thing they care about, the far left. There are liberals who support Israel, and now you've got a problem. Michael Rappaport was one of them. He ain't going to vote for Joe Biden. He doesn't want to be involved with the Democrats now. Trump's going to come out and be like, yeah, I'm for Israel. And then what do I see? Me and many others are going to be like, don't care. Trump is the guy who was setting up peace, Abraham Accords. And I know some libertarians don't like that. But he's also the guy who was trying to get our troops out. I will take it. And then Trump says pro-Israel, and a lot of people want to vote for him. I'm like, I don't know. I don't care that much about Israel. Have you seen the price of gold lately? It's hitting all-time highs. And when it comes to investing in gold, check out Noble Gold Investments. They have a track record of excellence that's second to none. Just look at their thousands of five-star reviews on Trustpilot, Google, and the Better Business Bureau. Customers rave about their knowledgeable staff, smooth investment process, and life-changing results, which you can see for yourself online. That's the kind of reputation you can count on. But it's not just about the reviews. Noble Gold Investments truly care about their clients. They take the time to understand your unique needs and goals, and they give expert guidance every step of the way. That level of personalized service is rare in this industry. Look, when it comes to securing your financial future, you can't afford to take chances. Go with the gold company that has earned the trust of countless investors. Visit noblegoldinvestments.com/Tim Pool today and discover why Noble Gold Investments is the only choice for smart, secure gold investments. Or give them a call at 877-646-5347. Again, that number is 877-646-5347. And so here you are, a coalition being built where former liberals who support Israel are going to say, I'll take it. Pro-Israel people will say, I'll take it. Anti-Israel people can coalesce around the Democratic Party if they want. But even Joe Biden's desperate to maintain these large Democrat donors. In the end, I don't see how Biden can make this play short of some kind of shadow campaign. But I suppose we'll see. As the polls continue, we just see more and more people breaking away from the Democratic Party. What more could you get? I think we're beyond the 2020 tactics. But hey, we'll see. Good luck, I guess. I think things are looking pretty good for us. Next segment is coming up at 4 p.m. on this channel. Thanks for hanging out, and I'll see you all then. World War III or Very Slow Newsweek? I'm going to have to go with Very Slow Newsweek. But the story from 60 Minutes last night is that Russia is behind what's called Havana Syndrome, and that Russia has an energy weapon that is a laser gun. Okay, not a laser gun, it's an energy weapon, because they say it uses radio frequencies or sonic weapons of some sort to cut holes into your brain. Now, you may remember the story of Havana Syndrome. Many people in Havana were saying that they were, I believe it was Havana, they were, obviously, they were, they were having trouble seeing, they were getting migraines, they couldn't see the stairs properly, and they were struggling to move about. Many people wondered if this was some kind of energy weapon. And then the U.S. came out and said, no, we don't know what it is. It's not an energy weapon. Well, now, in the midst of an escalating war with Russia, we can rely on 60 Minutes to come out and give us the exact reason why we must go to war with Vladimir Putin and to rally that support. Because Russia is actually targeting our intelligence agents. Yeah, it's April Fool's Day, too. It's like the worst day to be on the internet because everyone thinks they're funny. There is nothing worse than going through social media, trying to learn about what's going on in the world, and having quite literally everybody making up stupid garbage. And I'm just like, here we are. Everyone's got something to say. And the worst ones are the ones that try to be subtle. Like, it's fine if you come out and say, I'm quitting being a cop to go to clown college. And I was like, haha, you know, we get it. But it's the people who put out stories that seem like they might be true. And then you're like, are you wasting my time, dude? I'm going to go ahead and assume everyone's lying because everybody hates it. And for some reason, everybody wants to put out their dumb tweet. Okay. Well, for me, April Fool's Day is every day because I'm tweeting garbage nonstop. But here's the story. Basically, Russia is behind this attack on our intelligence agents. And, you know, Mike Cernovich, many others are questioning this because the people making the claims have no credibility. And at the same time, we're wondering if Vladimir Putin has these powerful energy weapons, why don't they use them in war? Now, look, I got to be honest. I think it's possible that Russia actually does have some kind of directed energy weapon that can cut holes in your brain. And there's a reason why they don't use it in war, because it's a short range weapon that only really works when you can park a vehicle next to a building. And if you're in Ukraine fighting a war, the chances you're going to be able to effectively park a vehicle, a nondescript vehicle, anywhere near your opponents is zero. But in peacetime or in espionage, easy to do. So the answer is actually, I mean, this makes sense. The question is, why would the U.S. deny it? Wouldn't they want to come out and say, yeah, Russia did this? Well, the argument is, if the U.S. were to come out and say Russia actually attacked U.S. personnel, then the American people may actually want war, and it may actually drive an escalation of war, a war the U.S. is not ready for. The United States and NATO would very much like to keep the conflict in Ukraine and not have it spread around. If the U.S. were to come out and say Russia is frying the brains of Americans, well, then you've got a problem. Either the U.S. then says, and we will do nothing about it, or they come out and say, we're escalating the war. Perhaps. 60 Minutes propaganda exists as such. that they can come out and say it while providing just enough cover so that they don't have to drive escalation, but can garner support from the public against Russia. Or it's all lies, and they're trying to come up with some reason to claim that Russia's behind all of this. Maybe, or is the Cubans, I don't know. The funny thing is, 60 Minutes and Daily Mail and other outlets are saying, it's a whistleblower. A whistleblower has revealed that Russia has these weapons. And my attitude is just like, dude, if this was an actual whistleblower, a dozen vehicles would have surrounded his house, guns drawn, it would have dragged him out and turned him into gulag. Okay? We've seen what happens to people who actually blow the whistle. Take a look at Julian Assange, who's not a whistleblower, but a journalist. And we see what happens when real whistles get blown. Here's a story from the Daily Mail. Russia is behind the Havana Syndrome attacks on U.S. troops, a whistleblower has warned. As he said, the Pentagon was afraid to acknowledge the potential use of energy weapons because it risks sparking war with the nuclear power. I don't believe it. You mean to tell me that the U.S. is like, they're directly attacking our troops, but we don't want to start a war. Instead, let's just send all of our intelligence assets, troops, and weapons and money to Eastern Europe to provide Ukraine with support and weapons to blow up Russian ships, to blow up Russian pipelines, and that won't escalate us towards war? Spare me your lies. Research by The Insider, a Russia-focused investigative media group based in Riga, Latvia, reported that Havana Syndrome may be linked to energy weapons wielded by members of a Russian military intelligence sabotage unit. Now, I'll say this again. I'm not going to outright just dismiss this. This is a strong possibility. It's true. I don't know what strong means. 12%? Who knows? A U.S. intelligence investigation whose findings were released last year found that it was very unlikely a foreign adversary was responsible for the ailment, first reported by U.S. embassy officials in the Cuban capital Havana in 2016. But Insider reported that members of a Russian military intelligence unit, GRU, known as 29155, had been placed at the scene of reported health incidents involving U.S. personnel. They are alleged to have used sonic weapons to target their victims' brains with radio frequencies causing symptoms of Havana syndrome, which include migraines, nausea, memory lapses, hearing loss, poor balance, and dizziness. Retired Army Lieutenant Colonel Greg Edgreen, who led the Pentagon investigation into the Havana syndrome incident, told 60 Minutes that he is confident that Russia is behind the attacks, and that acknowledging the potential use of sonic weapons would bring up security questions. Sonic weapons is crazier than lasers. Sonic weapons, theoretically, what they have here, travels through walls. Now, I don't know what kind of energy weapon it may be, but using sound to fry holes in people's brains, that's what one woman said. She was suffering all these symptoms, goes to the doctor, they do a scan in her brain, and they're like, you have holes in your brain. And she's like, what? That's crazy. I'm going to be honest. If someone were to ask me, what do I think is causing people to have holes in their brains? I'm going to go with plastics, seed oils, pesticides, well before I go with Russia shooting sonic weapons through walls to melt our brains. But maybe. Lieutenant Colonel Ed Green said the burden of proof under both the Trump and Biden administration was set impossibly high, explaining, I think it was set so high because we did not, as a country and a government, want to face some very hard truths. Can we secure America? Are these massive counterintelligence failures? Can we protect American soil and our people on American soil? Are we being attacked? And if we are being attacked, is it an act of war? He also claimed that the attacks are part of a worldwide mission by Russia targeting U.S. officials to neutralize them. I'd like to take this time, my friends, and tell you, you know, living very near Francis Scott Key Bridge, we drove by. We actually got to see the wreckage. Crowds forming, staring at this collapsed bridge on this gigantic container ship. And these photos you see online, they don't do it justice. These aerial images, no way. Standing there looking at this massive container vessel. And I said to myself, this is supposed to be an accident. Look, how are you going to come out on Sunday and say that Russians are using lasers to melt the brains of our intelligence agents, but the vessel that destroyed a bridge, disabling one of the largest ports in the country and shutting down East Coast hazmat transport or severely hindering it. Coincidence. I'll put it this way. There are a lot of people who are tweeting, Tim Pool's trying to push this narrative that it wasn't an accident. Push the narrative. I am entertaining this thought. When the bridge goes down, within a few hours, we have the government come out and say it was an accident. Trust us. And I'm like, y'all didn't investigate anything. You didn't investigate anything like that as an accident. No, that's a bunk explanation. It may be an accident, but without investigating, how are they going to come out and say that? And they did. More importantly, you're going to come out on TV and say Russia's got energy weapons to melt our brains, but don't look over there at one of our largest ports being shut down? I'm sorry, that's nuts. Okay? Occam's razor. In the absence of evidence, the explanation that makes the least amount of assumptions tends to be correct. So let's take a look at that bridge once again to revisit this story, because I want you guys to know this too. Did you know that another, what do we have here? I don't know if I have the tweets pulled up. Maybe it's over here. No, I don't know where it is. Another ship. Is it here? Here we go. Another bridge was hit by another ship. This time it was only shut down for a few hours, but an Oklahoma bridge was struck by a large barge. Now, okay, maybe it's all just coincidence. Fine. It could be. But let's entertain Occam's razor for a second. U.S. is accused of being involved in the terror attacks in Moscow. That's what Putin's claiming. Putin and his allies and his media assets are saying we are at war with NATO and the United States. Okay, that's long, long been known. So let's play Occam's razor. A gigantic cargo vessel, massive, with massive kinetic energy, loses power at the worst moment. The power kicks back on. They drive the engines into full power, which causes a drift. So akin to like a balloon, when you have a balloon and you release the bottom and it spins around in random directions, what's happening is the force in the back is pushing so far forward, the back portion wants to move forward. But the front portion doesn't have the same propulsion, inertia, so it starts to bend, being pushed out of the way. That's why rockets have stabilizers, to keep it stable. So the idea is when the engines kick back on, the boat kicks into full blast and starts drifting directly towards one of two central support beams. And then the power goes out again and they can't stop. Anchor doesn't work. Slam right into it. Okay. Occam's razor would suggest it was intentional. Why? We're at war. One of our largest ports was just disabled. Vessels that were in the port can't leave. Hazmat transport on the East Coast is hindered. A massive strike. We're now looking at coal exports. There's a whole bunch of problems. I'm not saying it was intentional. I'm saying the least amount of assumptions is that someone drove it into the pillar. People keep saying, Tim keeps saying cyber attack. I've said cyber attack, but have we ruled out that a guy just went beep and pressed a button to slam it into the bridge? Knowing the boat's going to be fine. I mean, like the people on it aren't going to get hurt. Did you know Fast-Growing Trees is the biggest online nursery in the U.S. with more than 10,000 different kinds of plants and over 2 million happy customers in the U.S.? They have everything you could possibly want, like fruit trees, palm trees, evergreens, houseplants, and so much more. Whatever you're interested in, they have it for you. Find the perfect fit for your climate and space. Fast-Growing Trees makes it easy to order online, and your plants are shipped directly to your door in 1 to 2 days. And along with their 30-day Alive and Thrive guarantee, they offer free plant consultation forever. This spring, they have the best deals online, up to half off on select plants and other deals. And listeners to our show get an additional 15% off their first purchase when using the code POOL at checkout. That's an additional 15% off at fastgrowingtrees.com using the code POOL at checkout. fastgrowingtrees.com, code POOL. Offer is valid for a limited time. Terms and conditions may apply. My point is this. To believe this was an accident, you have to believe several things. That whatever disabled the engines happened, one in a million shot, it happens. Like, engines fail. People are posting online, like, engines fail all the time. Okay. Right at the right moment. Kicks back on right at the right moment. Engines rev to full power at the right moment. Steering the vessel right towards this pillar right at the right moment. Like, all of these massive coincidences to make this boat slam into that bridge and disable it. If it were any other bridge, like in Oklahoma, look at that. The barge slams into it and nothing happens. And then they say in the news, like, well, you know, the barge doesn't have that much kinetic energy compared to a massive container ship. My point is this. They want us to believe the Francis Scott Key Bridge without doing an investigation accident. They want us to believe that Russia has energy weapons that they are positioning outside of embassies and other American asset domiciles or whatever to melt the brains of American targets. And that we only know about it because a whistleblower who's not been criminally charged. Yeah, I find that hilarious. I'm just going to say this. You can't have it both ways, okay? You can't come to me and say, I have zero evidence, but I'm telling you right now, that's a laser gun they are firing at our brains. And I'm just like, yes, tell me more about the laser weapons. Then a gigantic cargo vessel piloted by a Ukrainian guy slams into one of two support comms, disabling this bridge for one of the largest ports of the country. And they're like, accident. And I'm like, did you do an investigation? Accident. Okay, I guess. I mean, people win the lottery. It's true. I'm not saying I know for sure. I'm saying, looking at the probabilities of this, it's absurd to run this story telling me that I should believe Russia's got laser guns. Okay, energy weapons. But that the vessel that literally piloted right into a support comm disabling one of our largest ports was an accident. How about this? The people who got brain problems are just people suffering from brain problems. Why is it that of the people who have been negatively impacted by Havana syndrome, the answer is simply not just they ate bad food, they got a virus or a bacterial infection. How is it Russia did it? This whistleblower. He claimed that the attacks are part of a worldwide mission by Russia targeting U.S. officials to neutralize them. I think it's entirely possible. Don't get me wrong. I also think it's entirely possible the barge thing was an accident. I'm just saying, don't try to convince me of this crazy conspiracy theory when y'all at the same time are going to say a gigantic barge slamming into a bridge disabling a large port was an accident that we didn't investigate. But we know it's true. That's the crazy thing. The year-long insider investigation, in collaboration with CBS documentary series 60 Minutes and Germany's Der Spiegel, also reported that senior members of Unit 29155 received awards and promotions for work related to the development of non-lethal acoustic weapons. I mean, I could believe it. Acoustic weapons are a real thing. There's something that has long been hypothesized on the conspiracy side of the internet. They'll tell you in the press and the intelligence, oh, no, it's not real. They're called ultra-low frequency generators. And the conspiracy stuff that I've read is that you can pulse ultra-low frequency sound waves into an area at such a rate that it will make people vomit and they'll get really sick and things like that. I would not be surprised. The insider report said the first incident of Havana syndrome symptoms may have happened earlier than 2016 when U.S. embassy staff in Cuba started complaining about pain in their ears and strong pressure in their heads. It said, quote, there were likely attacks 2 years earlier in Frankfurt, Germany, when a U.S. government employee stationed at the consulate there was knocked unconscious by something akin to a strong energy beam. More than 1,000 Americans have reportedly been affected by Havana syndrome, and there have also been cases of foreign officials claiming to have suffered similar symptoms. State Department Security Officer Mark Lenzi, who worked in the U.S. consulate in Guangzhou, China, told 60 Minutes that he and his wife started experiencing symptoms after hearing strange sounds like a marble going down a metal funnel in their apartment in 2017. He said he believes that him and his wife were targeted with a weapon using radio frequency energy for his work analyzing electronic threats to diplomatic missions using top secret equipment. Other staff members said they were struck while on U.S. soil, also reporting of hearing bizarre sounds and experiencing head pain, as well as memory loss, impaired vision, and poor balance. So that's what they say. They say Havana syndrome is loud sounds described as chirping, clicking, or screeching, pain in one or both ears. Many felt the sensation come from a particular direction or were felt when in a specific location. Headache, impaired concentration, memory loss, insomnia, depression, impaired balance. Tinnitus is hearing loss. What is this? Are they saying IBS? Visual. What is this one? Nausea. Okay, the stomach. Oh, the feet. Unsteady gait, loss of balance, vertigo, and dizziness. I'd imagine they'd put those dots on the ear. Impaired balance. For the first time, Greg Edgreen, who ran the Pentagon's investigation into mysterious neurological symptoms suffered by American officials, speaks out publicly. And then I'm supposed to believe that a guy who is, what did they say his job was? Ran the Pentagon's investigation. Like, this guy's got to have clearance. And he's just going to come out in 60 Minutes and be like, yes, it's all true. Russia did it. Welcome to World War III. This is the game they are playing with. Do a simple Google search for World War III. And I'm tired of talking about it. I really am. Because either it happens or it doesn't. It's probably happening now. We're in World War III. In 100 years, they'll call it World War III or whatever. Russia underwent World War I and a civil war at the same time. Maybe that's what the U.S. will see. Here we go. 3 days ago, we've got World War III looms 16 hours ago. British and French Air Force teams up to hone vital readiness as World War III threat rises. 1 day ago, World War III fears grow as North Korea, blah, blah, blah. 2 days ago, Poland Prime Minister issues blunt Putin World War III warning. War has already started. Oh, we're already in World War III. Okay, 1 day ago, horrifying warning as Vladimir Putin hints there will be a third world war. 23 hours ago, Daily Express, Putin says World War III. World War III fears fueled as Europe told conflict can come very quickly 3 days ago. What would America look like if it lost World War III 1 month ago? Cyber attack, Israel, World War III. U.S. bridge collapse sparks conspiracy theories 5 days ago. That's just the front page of this. Putin signs decree calling up 150,000 Russian conscripts. Everyone's acting like that is indicative of a looming war. My understanding is that they do this every year. Russia has conscription, or at least over the past several years with Ukraine. So I don't know too much about how Russia handles conscription or anything like that. Considering where we're currently at, I would not be surprised if we are already in World War III. You know, it's really fascinating. At the new Timcast studio, we have nearly every copy of Life magazine ever. We have many duplicates too. So I'm gonna have to have someone go through all of the magazines, organize them by year, by month, by year, because it was a monthly, I'm pretty sure. We even have the first. So Life magazine originally was called something else. And then when it became Life magazine, we have that original. The reason why I bring this up, we have the Life magazine from the month before D-Day and what was being reported. There are photos of tanks all just like lining up in these fields in the UK. And it says the US sends weaponry to the UK to help them shore up their defenses as, you know, Hitler's invasions and the war rages on. That's what the media was reporting. Little did anyone know what was actually being planned. Storming the beaches of Normandy. D-Day. What did they report? No, we're just defending Ukraine. I mean, the UK, not Ukraine. We're just here to defend the United Kingdom from an invasion. In reality, we were planning an invasion ourselves. To storm into France, to push back the Germans, teaming up with the Soviets, that's right, the Soviets, to push back on the other side and surround Germany and isolate Hitler in Berlin, and then put an end to the war. I wonder what history will say based on what we have today. It's so easy. It's so easy to look at everything today and think you know everything, but the truth is you know nothing. And what's likely going to happen is maybe a year from now, when we're in full-on active conflict, they'll say things like, we knew the whole time Havana Syndrome and, you know. The fascinating thing about World War II, for instance, is that people believe we invaded Germany because of the Holocaust. And I think that's an easy thing to conflate because we know how bad the Holocaust was. We declared war on Germany for a variety of reasons. The bombing of Pearl Harbor pulled us in. But most people did not realize. There's a couple of ways you can probably put it, that we didn't know the Holocaust was happening or that we did not realize the scale of how deranged and insane Hitler had become, the things they were doing in these places with these concentration camps. And so a lot of people think we had to invade. Look what they were doing with the Holocaust. Well, we invaded because Hitler was just trying to take over Europe, crushing the real fear, the expansion of these ideologies. And it's a bit complicated. But the propaganda at the time, you look at these magazines, it's Hitler's imperialist endeavors and things like that. And once the U.S. gets in and realize what he had done, there was an order to document everything. My point here is this. Many people look back and make assumptions about what causes war when the news reporting was very different at the time. Even going back to the U.S. Civil War, the assumption is, you know, everybody today thinks slavery. So we were fighting. No, I mean, several Union states had slavery, and Abraham Lincoln had no problem with it. So I tell you this right now, with what's going on with Havana Syndrome or whatever this may be, the reality is, after the war is over, the narrative will completely invert. And you'll probably be surprised. I'll leave it there. Next segment's coming up at 1 p.m. on this channel. Thanks for hanging out, and I'll see you all then. I'm 28, and I'm scheduled to die in May. Why? No reason. Literally no reason. I don't feel good is the reason. Now, I'm sure there are many people who have suffered from depression who are going to say things like, Tim, you don't understand how bad depression can be. I certainly can't say that I've ever been so depressed that I would want to end my life. And I honestly, outside of chemical issues, don't think there is a philosophical depressive reason. That is to say, much of depression that people experience could be resolved by exercise, eating right, finding purpose, and many of these things. However, I do recognize that there is clinical medical depression where someone's brain literally doesn't work. That I understand. I still don't see it as a reason to take someone's life, especially at 28. But here's the story. Now, I have to wonder why this is. You may ask yourself, what is happening to our society that in Europe and Canada, they are ramping up medical assistance and dying to people for being homeless or depressed and to young people? When I was young, the argument was, look, some people are on their deathbed. They're 65. They have terminal cancer. They're being kept alive by machines. And they say, I don't want to live this way. And there's an argument over whether or not they should be allowed to just pull the plug. And one side said, no, you must live. And the other side says, it's your choice. Well, that choice was a slippery slope. Which brings us to this point, where now anyone, for any reason, can just decide to die. But I wonder, are these the political machinations of Malthusian conspiracy, conspiracists? Or is that, maybe that's not the right word. Conspiracists usually imply someone who thinks there's a conspiracy. Malthusian elites, who want to whittle down the amount of people in this world. I don't know. I think this may actually just be a natural result. It may be the way things were always going to go, and it may be that this is all predetermined. Now, how could that be? How could the good Lord maketh as such? Well, what I mean to say is, pending any kind of intervention from strong moral individuals, humans will do this. I don't think you need a grand conspiracy to orchestrate medical assistance in dying or anything like that. I think that strong moral endeavors fail when community breaks and populations grow too large. So it's not just that we're seeing medical assistance and dying. It's that we're seeing all sorts of degeneracy. And it's because there is no large group of morally strong men, and women, of course, to push back against this. Even today, you know, we talk about how Christians are mostly leave me alone, let me mind my own business, and now churches are becoming LGBT social clubs. There are not enough connected and strong individuals to say no to things like this. Here's a story from the Free Press. Zariah Terbeek, 28, expects to be euthanized in early May. Her plan, she said, is to be cremated. I did not want to burden my partner with having to keep the grave tidy. We have not picked an urn yet, but that will be my new house. She added an urn emoji after house exclamation point. Terbeek, who lives in a little Dutch town near the German border, once had ambitions to become a psychiatrist, but she was never able to muster the will to finish school or start a career. She said she was hobbled by her depression and autism and borderline personality disorder. Now she was tired of living, despite, she said, being in love with her boyfriend, a 40-year-old IT programmer, and living in a nice house with their two cats. She recalled the psychiatrist telling her they had tried everything. If there's nothing more we can do for you, it's never going to get any better. At that point, she said she decided to die. I was always very clear that if it doesn't get better, I can't do this anymore. As if to advertise her hopelessness, Terbeek has a tattoo of a tree of life on her upper left arm, but in reverse. There's a funny story. There was some guy, is it an urban legend, perhaps? An internet legend. A man who was depressed decided that he was going to kill himself. And so what he did was he flew down to Tijuana, did a bunch of drugs, banged a bunch of hookers, and then realized, this is great! I'm going to keep going. It's like, yikes. Well, I guess that's his cure, or it's better than dying. I don't have no idea. May just be an urban legend. But as the online meme goes, and it dates back some 15 or so years, if you really were thinking about ending your life, then you must realize the world is your oyster. You no longer fear anything. You can do anything. You could be anything. If you've truly come to the point where you think nothing is worth it, nothing gets better, and you really want to end it, well, now your risks go to zero. There are many people who have children. The risk for them taking action to change the world, to run for office, to try and invent something, to going off on an adventure and climbing a mountain, the risk is so high. You fall from that mountain, your kid gets hurt. You run for political office, they come for your kids. But if you truly have nothing to live for, you have zero risk. Now, I certainly don't recommend anyone do anything drastic or dangerous. I'm just saying that's the meme on the internet. Unfortunately, now no one has purpose. I mean, I say no one, but many people have no purpose to the point where they're actually going to start killing people because they're bored. I blame her parents. You know, there's a story this past weekend. A second ship crashed into another bridge. The bridge was fine. It reopened in a couple of hours. And, you know, the question is, how does that happen? Well, someone commented, and it was fairly astute. They said, boomers did not pass on their knowledge. And I thought to myself, that's really interesting. And I think that's the case. I look back to, I was listening to the song Longview by Green Day. I sit around and watch the tube, but nothing's on. Change the channel for an hour or two. And I was thinking to myself, you know, we used to see in these movies, everybody would say that, man, they looked really old back then. That's what they'd say. It's like in the 90s, this guy's 30. He looks 50. What happened? Well, I think it's it may be fairly obvious. When I was thinking about this song Longview, I'm like, sitting around watching the TV, but nothing's on. There used to be so little to watch on TV, you'd leave your house. You'd go outside and into the sun. And the sun would cook you. Long-term exposure to the sun does cause skin damage, and it makes you appear to age faster. Not that your internal organs are, but, you know, causes damage to the skin. So it's a fact that people who spend more time in the sun will wrinkle faster, and they look older. Now with the internet, everyone's indoors 24/7, and people are starting to look younger and younger. And there are these videos where it's all, and she's like, I'm 50, and I look super young. Anyway, my point is this. When I was listening to that song, I thought about, where's his dad to come in and be like, get off your ass and go outside and do something? Then I thought, what was his dad doing? His dad, back in the day, had little TV to watch, maybe at night when you're home from work. And so before TV, people were mostly out doing things, whatever that thing may be. And so then I think about boomers not passing on this knowledge and how we get to the point where a 28-year-old is so bored she wants to die. Huh. And I thought about what it was like when I was a kid. You know, my parents kept saying, go to college. For what? And there it is. Now, I certainly expect that many people driving boats have degrees. Maybe. Not everyone. But the real issue wasn't so much whether you had a degree or not. It was that the idea that passing down, telling your kids to take after you, is what we destroyed. We destroyed the millennial generation. We as American society and probably humans. And how did we do it? By telling them not to follow in our footsteps. It used to be that, and it still is in many regards, but, you know, I went to a maple farm in PA. It was awesome. There was an old man who showed us how they get the maples out of the tree and the maple syrup and they make the maple candies. And we were really excited. And he had daughters and his daughters were inheriting the business. And it was like an 8th or 9th generation maple farm. That's amazing. You know, your dad stuck a spigot in a tree and whatever it's called and said, look at this delicious liquid that comes out. We got to cook that down and we'll get delicious syrup. And then he told his son. And they started harvesting the maple syrup and the maple sugar because back in the day, maple sugar was the most common sugar. It wasn't sugar cane or beets. It was actually from maple trees. That's how we got sugar for our food and for bakeries and things like that. It's crazy, right? And so delivering the syrup was very important. And so a man would tell his son, this is how we make a living. People really want this, so we're going to keep making more of it. The kid would grow up, become a young man himself. And the dad would say, you're taking on more responsibilities. And then eventually, the old man would say, it's just getting too old for this, and it's your turn, son. You're now going to be in charge. Family stuck together. Fathers pass these things down to their sons. Mothers pass down homemaking and home economics to their daughters. Daughters helped maintain the home, became wives to keep things in order, while the men did the production. Something happened. And I'm not saying it's all absolute, but something happened where now it's, okay, son, you know, look, I work in computers. That will pass down a little bit to you, but now go to college and learn from an institution. Do not learn from me. Do not inherit my trade. Do not learn of my practices. Now, what does this have to do with a woman killing herself? This woman is 28. She has no hope and no purpose. She's so bored and depressed and nothing gets better. She wants to die. And I think it's because she has no faith. Nothing was given to her. She has no purpose. Nothing was given to her. She was raised as a blank slate. And that's what you get. Listless vessels. People who say, I don't care. She dreamed of being a psychiatrist, but did not have the will to actually go to school and finish. Why? Honestly, I don't know completely. For me, I suppose when I was growing up, there were hobbies and interests. And, you know, I grew up Catholic. We went to church. I don't know that that informed my will or passion or purpose. Probably. I don't consider myself Christian these days, but I do understand the importance of the Christian moral foundation. And I did end up reading a bunch of books on philosophy and some theology and stuff. And so I don't consider myself Christian. I do believe that God exists, and I do believe life has purpose. And some have described my views as deist. I honestly don't know. But I wonder if that's it. If you do not teach your children or your society does not teach the younger generation moral philosophies, be it religious or otherwise. I'm sure many Christians will say Christian, of course. But yes, I'm saying Christian or some kind of strong moral philosophy, understanding rights and purpose. People sit around and think, for what? What is this? I don't know. And that's a scary thing. When I was younger, the idea around the time when I was a teenager that I started to become atheist, which was more just doing what I was told as opposed to actually believing something, was rooted very much in if, you know, religions were created because otherwise people would just kill themselves. They'd have no purpose. And so in order to enforce laws and maintain social order, powerful men said, oh, there's a guy, he's going to punish you if you don't listen. I don't know that I believe that's the actual reason. I think that's a young, naive, liberal reason, perhaps. Certainly, there are powerful individuals in politics who do use the threat of eternal damnation for political gain. But I think the reality is basic religion in many ways was first an attempt at explanation, but also the understanding of moral philosophies based on how we can live better and we can succeed and the reason why we must carry on our mission. And there is a mission and we choose, we have free will. But now I see stories like this. This young woman saying, it's not going to get better, so just, I'm going to die. And I feel like it's unfortunate because, you know, I've read much about biological determinism and things like that. And I truly believe that anyone could be anything. I really do. I think it has a lot to do with programming, building neural pathways. And while I certainly think that, like, on average, you're not going to get a great Thai basketball player because they tend to be shorter, and basketball is a game that requires, or that is, you are benefited by having height. I certainly think that, you know, Muggsy Bowes, he actually exemplifies, what was he, 5'3", and he could 360 dunk? That dude's a legend. You can be. I don't think we've seen the upper limit of human capabilities. But more to the point. Terbeek is a growing number of people across the West choosing to end their lives than live in pain. Pain that in many cases can be treated. Typically, when we think of people who are considering assisted suicide, we think of people facing terminal illnesses. But the new group is suffering from other syndromes, depression, or anxiety exacerbated, they say, by economic uncertainty, the climate, social media, and a seemingly limitless array of fears and disappointments. Quote, I'm seeing euthanasia as some sort of acceptable option brought to the table by physicians, by psychiatrists, when previously it was the ultimate last resort. I see the phenomenon, especially in people with psychiatric diseases, and especially young people with psychiatric disorders, where the healthcare professional seems to give up on them more easily than before. Social media. And that's really it, isn't it? It's another thing I was thinking. as I'm sitting in the car, we drove to take a look at the wreckage of the bridge because we're an hour away. It's not that far. Tons of people were crowding around staring at this thing that had collapsed. Social media, they say, the plague of our generation. It's good. It's bad. It allows me to bring this video and this podcast to you. At the same time, it melts the brains of people with less mental fortitude. And I'll explain. Depression. I remember when I was a teenager and I was on Friendster. You guys remember Friendster? I remember seeing these photos of kids who lived like my age, my peer group in Chicago. And I was so jealous. Here I was sitting in my room, 16 years old on Friendster. And I see this guy wearing a jean jacket, smiling. And they're like standing next to the raised bridge in Chicago with there's a guy I know and like a woman I know. And I'm like, man, they're downtown and I'm just sitting here doing nothing. I'm like, man, these photos look so cool. People posting these like wide angle shots of them, like making faces and smiling and laughing. And I'm like, man, why aren't I doing that? And the funny thing is, I was just not at that moment. So many people looked at the highlight reel of social media as this began. And I guess fortunately for me, having lived a portion of my life without the social media, I mean, my family had the internet since I was a little kid. Like real little kid, as long as I can remember. AOL back in the day. And went to CompuServe. We had CompuServe on DOS or whatever. And I remember realizing like, yeah, I do hang out with my friends on the weekends. We do stuff like this. We just don't post pictures of it. And everyone was saying, that's just the highlight reel. Don't let it get you down. But now we live in a world where there's nothing but the highlight reel. And more what we're seeing is young women, and to a certain degree men, but mostly women, digitally alter themselves to make the most exciting image possible, to scream to the world, look how amazing and exciting my life is. And what happens is people begin to think that is normal. When you go on Instagram and you see all of your posts are the most exciting thing imaginable, and you're sitting in a cubicle room or you're working at a burger joint, you have no pride in your job. You're like, I'm sitting here flipping burgers. All of my friends are posting these amazing photos from all of this cool stuff they're doing. Here's the reality. Your friend also works at a burger joint. On the weekend, they went rock climbing and posted a picture. Your other friend who works at Best Buy posted a picture of kayaking because they went on the weekend. The thing is, they're not posting pictures of them working at Best Buy. Every single photo you see is kayaking, mountain climbing, skateboarding, snowboarding, skiing, going to the club with friends, getting drunk at the bar. Everything is amazing. You go, I want to do all that, but I'm stuck here in this stupid job I don't want to do. What's happening with social media is that people are starting to view reality as the highlight reel because we don't want to share the mundane, and then nobody wants to do the mundane. There's no honor. There is nothing in it, but we are social creatures. We are creatures that want to fit in. So when we see other people do a thing, we want to do it too. I was listening to that song, Better Days, remember that one? By Citizen, who wrote that song? Better Days song, Citizen what? It's too many songs called Better Days. Or was it not called Better Days? Better Days in the Bottom drops out. Citizen King. I knew it was something like that. And like the first line in the song is, I got a good job at the dollar store. And I was like, dude, there is not a single millennial or Gen Z kid who's going to say that line ever. Go up to their friends and be like, I got a good job at the dollar store, but I've seen better days. A good job at the dollar store? Man, millennials would not accept that. This lady does nothing, doesn't want to do anything. And her story is that she just didn't have the willpower to finish school. This does not seem depression and autism and borderline personality disorder. This seems like a young person who was ill-prepared by her parents, who had the potential to be everything, but wants nothing. Can't have it, can't be it. The reality of this world is no fun anymore. Everyone's posting their highlight reels, pretending to be the biggest and the best. You know, it's fascinating because we actually, you know, when we were originally launching Cast Castle, it was like we're going to film a vlog, and it was a challenge. And I'm like, I still think we should I do still think the daily goings on of the IRL Timcast studio is vlog worthy. It's probably going to shift into what the Boonies is. Follow at Boonies HQ on Instagram. Search for it on YouTube. Subscribe. But it's going to be a lot of action sports and stuff, but shenanigans, dirt bike, riding around, daily vlog of what's going on in the studios and stuff like that, with a very action sportsy and shenanigansy environment. And the reality is, the challenge of it is, I'll explain to you, like, right now. What's happening right now at the Timcast studio? There's a couple of people enjoying some delicious yerba mate downstairs. There is a receptionist answering emails. That's it. There's nothing else. Nobody's skateboarding right now. Nobody's playing music. Carter may be here. He may be working on some songs. Quiet. You walk through the building and it's an office building. People are sitting at the computers typing away. I think people assume that coming here, there's going to be clowns juggling and chickens running around everywhere. And there's like a deer that sticks his head in the window wanting to get an apple or something. And it's like, you know, life is what it is. It's all fairly mundane. I wonder if skateboarding helped me with this understanding, though, in that you watch a skate video and you see somebody land the trick, they land the trick, and after 3 minutes, you see all these tricks get landed. But everyone who skates knows it took probably 100 hours to film that part. Traveling to places, very boring. Warming up before getting there, taking days off. Probably, I wouldn't count this towards the hours. But then even when they get there, it takes them like 10 tries, depending on the trick. Some tricks are so dangerous, you're like, nah, we know that he did that right away. But a lot of the tricks are like, I wonder how long it took him to get that one. Sometimes you'll see a guy in the video covered in dirt with pants ripped up, and you're like, man, he was there for days. And then they tell these stories like, yeah, it took us days. We had to keep coming back. You know, I fell. I bruised my heels. I had to come back 3 weeks later. We tried again. Finally did it. And so we know everything we watch on those videos is just a highlight reel. But I think the average person right now doesn't understand this. And so their worldview is, my life is boring and I'm depressed. I feel like the desire to be the highlight reel is responsible for so much. Why do people want to be other people? Why are people depressed? Why are people transgender? I'll tell you one component, I think. We know about rapid onset gender dysphoria. You've got young people who, what we call rapid onset gender dysphoria is when it's a social contagion element. I do believe that gender dysphoria existed before this phenomenon, but I do believe a lot of the phenomenon now is due to social media pressures. There was that report about young women who were developing Tourette's syndrome from watching TikTokers with Tourette's. People just want to be everyone else. So what happens is, if you are a young man and you see all these young women and they have millions of followers and everyone's screaming and cheering them on, well, yes, social beings say, I want to be what people will accept. And now what people are seeing is young women getting millions of followers doing relatively little. Like, certainly there are some women who do tremendous feats of strength or whatever. But typically it's like these women who are big on Instagram, it's because they're doing sexy poses and stuff. You know, some of them will, like, there's one female, she likes skates and she does some decent tricks. But then she puts on dresses and she pushes her boobs up. You get a young guy. He sees this, millions of followers, and for some of these people with weaker mental fortitude, they're thinking, I want to be that, because that's what people will accept. And for some reason in my life, no one likes me, people aren't mean to me, I'm not strong, I'm not big, but I could be that. And same thing for trans men. These females are seeing these guys who are doing triple backflips, and they're seeing all this cheering, and they're internalizing it. I'm not saying all issues of transgender is that. I'm saying I believe that plays a role. And now we have this. People who decide to die instead. Perhaps this is predeterminist. Perhaps there is no way to change something like this. Perhaps if people do not have the mental fortitude as prepared by their parents and the generations that came before them, they will be susceptible to listlessness, purposelessness, depression, anxiety, and then eventually suicidal ideation. And I don't have the answers for you, my friends. I can only tell you this. You make your purpose. You decide. Every day I wake up, I know what I have to do and why. It is a drive within me. There is a fire that I have lit. It will not go out. And that's why I do a morning show, a nightly show. I skate. We're just doing as much as we can. And I'll tell you why. There's a reason why I'm a big fan of Elon Musk. We should go to the stars. Humans should expand. Humans should succeed. Humans should do more. Humans should conquer. We will not do this if we become depressed and weak. We will not do this if we take our own lives. We must strive. We must never give up. And that means we need to be strong. We need to be fit. We need to eat better. You need to cut out the garbage, the processed sugars, the candy, the weird chemicals and preservatives. Talk to a doctor. I'm not trying to give health advice, but you should be fit. And a doctor or a nutritionist or something, find a plan. We should be the best we can be because that is our mission. There's no excuse to sit around indulging in the pleasures without our responsibilities. We cannot live this way. It is our mission to expand, to be fruitful, to multiply, and to conquer. So we're going to conquer the stars. We conquered the oceans. We conquered this planet. We have to balance this planet to make sure we don't die because we need that biome. But now we need to build more. This is what we will do. We'll only do it if people have that drive and that purpose. And that's going to require, I don't know, maybe not require, but I think what we're seeing now is the reason I think it may be predetermined is that the people of no purpose will just remove themselves. As sad as it sounds, and we don't want that to happen, that's the trend that they're building. And those of us who know our mission, we will carry on. What's the end result? It's evolution, baby. The end result is we win. I'm sad for this woman. I hate this stuff. I don't know what else to tell you. Be strong, be fruitful, and multiply. I'll leave it there. Next segment is coming up at 6 p.m. on this channel. Thanks for hanging out, and I'll see you all then. Yes, it's another one of these segments. From The Desirable Truth, posted by Clown World, a guy asks men and women, how would you rate yourself on a scale from 1 to 10? And of course, all the women in the video say that they're 10s, baby. There's a couple of women who say otherwise. One woman says 8. One woman says 11. When the woman says she's an 8, the other girls around her are like, no, believe in yourself. The guys say they're not. One guy's like, I'm a 6. The other guy's like, I'm a 2. I don't give an F, whatever. And the first thing I'm going to say about this video, my friends, it is likely edited. There's probably a lot of women who are like, I don't know, 6 or 7. And they don't include them. There's also a regional selection bias. So I say watch out for these videos. But I do think there may be a hidden truth here. And what I started thinking about when I saw this was, for those that track a lot of this male-female psychology and dating stuff, it's fairly popular for a lot of reasons. Guys are becoming more conservative, women becoming more liberal. Men and women are having less sex. They're not getting married. And there's questions about why. So people are certainly bringing these issues up. What you find is that women on average tend to message men in the 80% or higher attractiveness rating, and men have a standard bell curve. What that means is guys actually think that there's like an average beauty, whereas women don't care at all. They only want the hottest guys. Now, why is that? Some might argue it's because women are vain and entitled, and they think they deserve the hottest guys or nothing. Well, I think there's a balance here. I think guys are willing to bang anything. And I mean that somewhat jokingly. But for guys, it's like, you know, beauty matters. They want hot girls. For women, they need providers. From looking at this from an evolutionary psychological perspective, all women think they're beautiful because all guys want to bang them, right? There's like, no matter what a woman looks like, there's a guy hitting on her. So they get it all the time. And they're like, I must be really good. For guys, they're like, I got to try my hardest. I'm competing with all these other guys. And it creates this interesting situation where women will highly value their themselves and only want to be near the highest ranked guys. Let me play this video for you, and then we'll talk a bit about the psychology of sex. And I am no expert, but I think it's interesting. So let's play the clip. And I want to stress again, it's probably edited, but here you go.
On a scale of 1 to 10.
I personally would rate myself a 10.
I think I'm a 10 because I really think I'm pretty.
I think I'm a...
All right, let's do this. Let's do this. I'm gonna give you my personal rating. Ain't nobody gets 10s. Yo, 10s are unicorns. Like, there's a thing in skateboarding called the 9 Club, and that's because when you do the best trick in a contest, it's like 9.3 or 9.5. Because how do they give you a 10? Like, how did you do the perfect trick in a contest, right? But let's start. All right. So this first lady.
How much would you rate yourself on a scale of 1 to 10?
I personally would rate myself a 10.
So the first lady, it's like, I can understand why people would view her as attractive, but personality goes a long way. The dating websites show us that men actually care a lot about personality. Yep. And that's why, although guys tend to message women who are 22 years old, there's a lot of creepier stuff. Men actually find younger women more attractive, but aren't interested in underdeveloped brains. This lady right here, I'm just going to say it for me, 6.
I think I'm a 10 because I...
Because why? I mean, you're... I'm not saying it to be mean, like...
I really think I'm pretty.
But so, and here's what I'm trying to do, too. I'm not trying to insert my personal preference. Like, I have a girlfriend and everything like that. But let me stress this. There have been several studies on this where they've tracked the rating of attractiveness of people, and they vary. There was this great documentary I saw decades ago. I think it was called The Science of Sex, where they had men and women each get assigned a random number and put on their forehead so they can't see their own number. Then they're told, your goal is to pair up with the highest rated person possible. That's what you have to do. You don't know what your number is, but basically what they said was, if someone's got a 10, you want that 10. What happens? Everybody goes, they put all the men and women in the room. Nobody knows their own number. Everyone instantly goes to the 10s. The guy who's a 10 sees the woman who's a 10, and he goes, I want you. And she goes, I want you. Boom. The 10s have paired up easily. Then the 9s and the 8s. There was an interesting thing where it was the 9s, then the 8s. The 7s and the 6 actually went back and forth. Like 6 and 7, 7 and 6 paired up, something like that. Because the guy who's a 6 is like, hey, I'll take it. And she's like, I'll take it. The 10 didn't want me. The 9 didn't want me. The 8 didn't want me. I don't know what my number is, but I'll take it. And what ended up happening was the 1s were with 1s, 2s were with 2s, 3s were with 3s. Why? The person who's got a 1 asks everyone, and everyone says, no way. Finally, they look at each other and like, I guess it's us. So I'm trying to apply a general, like, mainstream view, right? And you're allowed to like whatever you want. Here's a lady.
I think I'm a 10.
10. No, she's certainly not. Certainly not. I think most people would say certainly not. Many guys might say 6 or 7.
I know I'm a 10. I'm confident that I'm confident a 10.
I'm a motherfucking 10.
Okay, this lady is a 4. And again, not trying to be a dick, but...
I'm a 10. I'm fat, but I'm a 10.
I'm fat, but I'm a 10.
I'm probably like a 6. Personality-wise, 10.
Dude, your personality is not a 10, okay? But here we go.
Oh, I'm going to go low. I'll go 2. I don't give a fuck.
We're so...
I'll go 2. I don't care. Actually... By saying you're a 2, good sir, it actually boosts your rating quite a bit. That's confidence.
We're 10.
We're 10.
We back ourselves.
Realistically. Realistically, like 8.
Like an 8. I was going to say an 8, yeah.
10.
Okay, I actually think those girls were being fair. These two women look conventionally attractive. They say, we're 10s. Realistically, we're 8s. Maybe a little high, but I think they know because they take care of themselves and look in the mirror. Question, though, is personality really does matter, and style matters a lot.
8. Too. I was going to say an 8, yeah.
10. Without a fucking question.
No.
BMS, babe.
Broke my scale.
Broke actually. My fucking...
Broke my scale.
10. 11.
I would say I'm an 8. Solid.
10.
You got to believe in yourself.
You've got to believe in yourself. This lady on the left, she's dressed up. She looks like she's got ready and everything. She says... 8. She's being reasonable.
I feel like if I'm being honest, I think I'm an 8.
10.
Aww. 10. I'll tell 10. You the reality.
How much would you rate yourself on a scale of 1 to 10?
On a scale of 1 to 10, I'm 10. I'm Hispanic and I got a penis.
How much would you rate?
So, here's what I think. I think many of these women don't actually think they're 10s. I think the video is selectively edited to exclude women who probably said something more reasonable. I think it's region specific. They're probably in Miami or something. So they're in areas where you have tons of this kind of women. I think if you went to a rural suburban church area, women are going to be much, much different. Men and women will both be very different. 6 or 7, maybe. That's always like a comfortable number. You're like, are you a 6 or are you a 7? And it's like, yeah, you know, you'd rather be a 7 because 7's the right place to be. You're not the best, but you're pretty good. You know, you get a B minus. I think the reality is most of these women do not really believe they're 10s. But they're saying that because, you know, for guys, if you're talking about, you know, that guy who said my personality is a 10, I think he kind of gets the idea. But going back to that Science of Sex documentary, they did this thing where they had women look at a bunch of pictures of men and rate them on a scale of 1 to 10 in terms of physical attractiveness. And of course, there's a guy who's like tall, chiseled, smiling, tall, dark, and handsome, all that. And they're like, his score was like 9.2 or some ridiculously high number. There's another guy who was short, frumpy, balding, chubby, and he got a 4. Here's the crazy thing. They went out, took these pictures and showed them to people and said, what number would you give this guy? And most of the people on the street gave the same numbers. Short, frumpy guy, 4. Tall, dark, and handsome, 9. Then something interesting. They added a bio to the side of the photographs. Tall, dark, and handsome. Guess what? Mid-30s and worked at a movie theater. Short and frumpy, computer programmer making $500,000 a year. Movie theater guy, 30. What happened? Tall, dark, and handsome. When they said, how would you rate this guy on his attractiveness on a scale of 1 to 10? And they saw his bio and his job. The women said, 7. Now, what about frumpy guy? 7. No kidding. The perception of beauty was heavily influenced by their social status, job title, and cash money. That's the difference between men and women. So for women, they're all coming out saying, I'm a 10. Why? Because they can have kids. So think about the evolutionary imperative here. A guy must produce resources to feed a family. A woman must be able to make the family. I'm not saying it's the way it should be. But that's the way it's been. Now it's changing with certain social dynamics for sure. But then what ends up happening is when it comes to starting a family, you need a woman who can have children. So they're like, I'm a 10. Why? Because I got a fat ass, she says. It's like the reality is they think they're 10s because they have the ability to reproduce. That puts their evolutionary value at 10. Then you get a guy. And it's like, how much can you provide to make a family? And it's like, that matters. So guys are like, I don't know, 6, 7. They don't actually think as much about your ability to generate wealth. That's why intelligence goes a long way. So as I would say, the way I would close this out, I think there's a lot of people on the left who get offended by these ideas. And then they post videos like, tips are ugly, blah, blah, blah. Dude, I don't care. You got to understand that there are evolutionary dynamics at play in psychology and biology that influence our wants and desires. We can overcome them, for we are thinking beings, but some people don't. So I love this. When I made those videos where I was like, conservatives tend to be more attractive, all of these libs were like, no, he's wrong, but he's actually right. But Tim's ugly, but he's actually right. Yeah. Conservatives do tend to be more attractive. They then post these videos like, this is what they do, that Taylor Swift video. What's it called? Like, you need to calm down or something. All the anti-LGB people in the video have crooked teeth and are overweight, and all the LGB people are like looking very pretty with their, you know, whatever, looking clean, and they have makeup and they're smiling and confident. That's the perception they have to generate, because they really, the left targets marginalized people who don't fit in as well, and they create a coalition around it. Whereas with the right, the beautiful people who have had things easier in life for being more attractive, taller men and prettier women, tend to think, hey, if I can do it, anyone can. And so that makes them more, conservative and independent minded. These dynamics matter. Studying them, I think, is fun. But we'll throw it to our guy in backpack here who does this a lot, the desirable truth. I don't think it's the truth. I'd like to see these videos in like a very moral and religious neighborhood. You walk up to a woman and say, how would you rate yourself on a scale of 1 to 10? And the woman might go, I don't. I think you'd have to ask my husband. And the husband's going to go, she's a 10. And she's going to go, aw, he's a 10 too. Like, you're going to get that from like hokey fun, you know, families. You go to the club where women are scantily clad and they're all going to say they're the best. I'll leave it there. Next segment's coming up tonight at 8 p.m. over at youtube.com/TimCastIRL. Thanks for hanging out, and I'll see you all then.